The chapter, or the passage that we read together earlier here in 1 Samuel chapter 23, it's at this point in David's life, he is still being hounded by Saul. In chapter 22, David is in the cave of Adullam. And in verse 5 of chapter 22, we read, "And the prophet Gad said unto David, Abide not in the hold, depart and get thee into the land of Judah. Then David departed and came into the forest of Harith." God told David through the prophet Gad that he wanted him to leave the cave of Adullam there and to go back to the land of Judah. In verse 1 of chapter 23 we read, "Then they told David, saying, Behold, the Philistines fight against Keilah, and they rob the threshing floors." So God, we see here, had a work for David to do back in the land of Judah. We see from Joshua chapter 15 that the town of Keilah was within the borders of the tribe of Judah. It was a fortified town, and the Philistines had come against it and laid siege to it. And the threshing floors, which were usually outside the city walls, were already being, the Philistines already were stealing from these threshing floors. And God needed David back here at this particular time, in this particular situation, to help these people. And there are four things that I want us just to consider from David and from the life of David here. There are many things, of course, about the life of David in the scriptures, many practical lessons that we can learn from his life and his walk with God. And just four things I want us to note here from this incident in his life here in chapter 23. Verse 1, it says, "Then they told David, saying, Behold, the Philistines fight against Keilah, and they rob the threshing floors. Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, Shall I go and smite these Philistines?" It's important for us to note David's spiritual condition just prior to this. David had been for a time backslidden in heart. He had been hounded, or was being hounded by Saul, who was relentlessly pursuing him, wanting to kill him. And he went to Samuel, and there, when he was there with Samuel, Saul three times sent messengers after him, and three times those messengers were subdued by the Spirit of God, restrained by the Spirit of God. In the end, Saul himself went, and even he was subdued by the Spirit and threw into a trance. Now, this was a powerful intervention by God on David's behalf that should have calmed his fears and renewed his confidence in God and in his ability to protect him and to look after him at this time. But sadly, it didn't. David got his eyes off the Lord, and he started to take things into his own hands. He became frightened. He got his eyes off the Lord and the Lord's mighty hand upon him. And he left from Samuel and is taking matters into his own hands. And his fellowship with God was broken at this time. And that led on to other sins, even the sins of telling lies to try and cover his own back. But whenever we come to chapter 23, I believe that David has made a spiritual recovery. And we'll see why we can say that. Some of his own people, the inhabitants of this town of Keilah, were in trouble. Their enemies, the Philistines, were fighting against them, and they needed to be rescued. And David at this time was still being hounded by Saul, the one who should have been protecting his own people, these people in this town, the people that he was ruling over. But even though David was being ill-treated at this time by Saul, we find that he wasn't sulking over the wrongs that were done to him, were being done to him. Instead, he was ready to return good for evil by coming to help the inhabitants of one of the king's besieged towns. David had more than enough on his plate at this time. trying to protect himself from Saul, and not only that, trying to provide for the needs of his 600 men. But in spite of all that, we find that David was unselfishly thinking of others rather than himself. He was putting the needs of others before his own. And all this shows to us that David had made a true spiritual recovery. You know, how often, whenever we are going through tough personal circumstances, do we become so preoccupied with ourselves and our circumstances that we don't even consider the needs of others, perhaps others who are in much worse circumstances than we are? These people in the town of Keilah were in much greater danger and more difficult circumstances than David was. They were about to be slaughtered by these Philistines. But you know, a mark of true spirituality is that we always put the needs of others before our own. No matter how difficult we might think our circumstances or our situation is in life, there's always others. There are always others who are in more difficult and trying circumstances than we are. And a mark of true spirituality is that in spite of our circumstances, in spite of how hard a time we might think we're having, do we consider the needs of others? Others in the family of God, others around us who are in much worse circumstances than we are. We read in Philippians 2, 4-7, these wonderful words: "Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, took upon himself the form of a servant, was made in the likeness of sinful flesh, became obedient unto death, even death itself." Folks, what a wonderful example Paul could give to these Philippians in Christ himself, the Lord of glory, the one who was eternally in the bosom of the Father, sharing in all the glory of God. And yet when it came to our salvation, when it came to rescuing us from our sin and our lost sinful condition, he didn't even consider equality with God something to be grasped at, but he forsook that wonderful position that he had there in the bosom of the Father. He was willing to come into this world, to humble himself, to take our human flesh, to go ultimately to Calvary's cross, to face that shameful, cruel, agonizing death. You see, Christ did not consider himself, but he considered the needs of others. He considered you and me in our lost, sinful condition, unable to save ourselves, unable to do anything to rescue ourselves from our lost, sinful condition. And he humbled himself and became obedient to the cross. You know, such a spiritual attitude is missing from the people of God in these days. It's me and my needs first. It's one of the marks of our spiritually backslidden state as a church. How different things would be, folks, if there were a true death to self, a true dying to me and my needs, and a true putting of the needs of others before our own. How different things would be. We see David, his true spiritual recovery here, in that he was not thinking of his own circumstances, as hard as they were, being hounded by Saul, but he was thinking more and putting the needs of these people in this town of Keilah who were about to be slaughtered, he was putting their needs before his own. Verse 2, it says, "Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go and smite these Philistines?" Here we have another mark or evidence of David's restored spiritual condition. He sought direction from the Lord in this situation. He didn't just rush into this situation to deliver these people, but he took time to seek the Lord and to ask the Lord for direction and how he would go about this. You see, David, having been anointed to the throne of Israel, knowing that one day he was going to be the king of these people, he had a great love for them and for his own country and these people that God had entrusted into his hand. And he wanted to protect them and free them from their enemies. But he wouldn't act until he first of all sought the Lord, until he committed the whole situation to the Lord. He wanted to know the Lord's mind and the Lord's will and the Lord's direction in this situation. You know, in all our service for God, you know, sometimes we think that we're doing a great spiritual work. But are we conscious in absolutely everything that we do in the service of the Lord? Are we absolutely conscious of our great and absolute need of the Lord? You know, sometimes even in the work of God, we think we know what to do. We hold our children's meetings or open air or services, and we think we know what to do, and we rush into it and we do it. But in it all, folks, are we deeply, deeply conscious that without him, we can do nothing. Without him, we can do nothing. That he is the one who is building his church. And unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. In all our service for God, folks, we ought to constantly seek his face for wisdom, for guidance, for help, realizing that it is only what is done for him with his help and his enabling, his anointing, his guiding and direction. It's only that that's really going to count in the service of God. The second part of verse 2, it says, "And the Lord said unto David, Go and smite the Philistines and save Keilah." What a blessed assurance we have here that when we truly seek the Lord humbly, sincerely, with an attitude of absolute dependence upon the Lord, with a desire not only to know what he wants us to do, but a desire to do what he wants us to do and what is pleasing to him, when we do that, we have a blessed assurance here that we will not be left in the dark. We will not be left in the dark or in ignorance. God's promise still stands, folks. In all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. God responded to David's cry here to know his will. He not only revealed his will to him, but he gave him a wonderful promise of success. Look what he says. He says, "Go and smite the Philistines and save Keilah." So God not only directed David to go and protect these people, but he gave him a wonderful promise that he would be successful, that he would smite them, that he would deliver and save these people. Folks, what an encouragement to us today in the work of God to humbly, sincerely, in faith, commit our way unto the Lord and to leave it in his hands. And he will lead us. He will guide us. He will give his promise to us to bless us. And he will bless us. What a wonderful example we have of that here in the life of David. So we see here, first of all, his spirituality. But secondly, I want us to note David's testing. You see, folks, whenever we are walking with God, whenever we are being faithful to him, whenever we are committing our way unto the Lord and leaving things in his hands and allowing him to do his work through us, we can expect testing. It's not all going to be plain sailing. We're going to face testing, and David faced a testing here right away, even before he went against against the enemies of the Lord. Look at verse 3. It says, "And David's men said unto him, Behold, we be afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we come to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines?" Here was a real testing to David's faith and confidence in the Lord. His men were fearful and reluctant to go and to fight against the Philistines. And if they didn't go with David, well, he certainly couldn't go himself to deliver these people. The reason why his men were afraid was because they were afraid of being caught, as it were, between two fires. If they went to the town of Keilah against the Philistines, then Saul and his army would come behind them, and they would be caught in the middle, and they would be slaughtered. Their eyes, you see, were on the difficult circumstances and not upon God the Almighty, who had told David to go, who had promised David that he would be successful. David's men's eyes were not on the almighty hand of God, upon his faithfulness to fulfill his promise. No, their eyes were on the difficult circumstances. And folks, whenever our eyes are on the difficult circumstances that we face, then we will always be fearful and discouraged. Put yourself in David's shoes here. You know, how often have we, whenever we've been facing perhaps difficult circumstances, seeking to have our faith and our confidence in God in those circumstances, but the unbelief of friends and perhaps even professing Christians has proved to be a real challenge to us and a hindrance. Paul experienced such a thing in his life and ministry. In 2 Timothy 4, verse 16 to 17, he says these words. He says, "No man stood with me, but all men forsook me. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me." Here was Paul, a particular point in his life and ministry, when he says, no man stood with him. He was alone. He was like David here. He was standing alone. It was as if everyone was against him, or everyone were failing to stand with him. You know, at times all our friends may forsake us, not literally, but by their unbelief, they fail to stand with us as we seek to take our stand for the Lord in our fight against the enemy in these days. How should we respond if we find ourselves in that situation? Should we see this as an obstacle to us? Did David see this as an obstacle here and say, well, there's no point in me going against this town now. My men are afraid to go and I can't go alone. Is that how David looked at this situation? No, we shouldn't look at such a situation as an obstacle, but rather as a testing of our faith. Instead of hindering us, we should cause it to drive us to the Lord with a fresh dependence upon him to see us through. Paul was able to testify that in spite of no one standing with him, notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. He was able to cast himself afresh upon the Lord in that situation, and he knew the wonderful experience of the Lord standing with him and strengthening him. And that's exactly what David did in this situation. Beginning in verse 4, "Then David inquired of the Lord yet again." David brought the matter again to the Lord. And what a powerful example David sets before us here. He didn't allow the unbelieving fears of his men to drive him to despair. He knew that God had told him to go against the Philistines and save the people of Keilah. He knew the Lord had promised that he would be successful. And the God who had promised him that, he knew, was the same God who was able to come to his men in this situation to change their hearts, to calm their fears, to give them that same confidence in the Lord that he himself had. Nothing was too hard for the Lord. David knew that God could change the hearts of his men in this situation. It seems like God allowed this trial to face David to renew his confidence and his faith in him, and to cast himself more fully upon the Lord in this situation. You know, in the spiritual battle that we face in these days, and I trust that we're all acutely aware in these days that we are in a spiritual battle as the people of God. A spiritual battle is raging around us, folks. There's great spiritual decadence and death. The enemy is attacking the truth of God and the word of God as never before. We see great spiritual deadness in the church. We see our young people in the world mad on sin and sinful pleasures, destroying their lives by sin and the pleasures of sin. In the midst of all that we're facing in these days, how few there really are of God's people who are filled with faith and expectancy that God will yet arise in our day and generation, stretch forth his hand and deal with the enemy, scatter the enemy and revive his cause and his work again. Folks, I fear that there are very few of God's people who are in that place in these days, filled with faith and expectancy that God will not allow things to go on as they're going, with the enemy triumphing over us on every hand, with great spiritual death and decadence in the church. But oh, that God would fill us as his people afresh with a confidence and a faith in him, such as David had here, in spite of the unbelieving doubts of his men, the fears that they had, in spite of the enemy and what he was doing against this town and against the people of God. David was filled with faith and expectancy. He brought the matter before the Lord, knowing that God alone could conquer this situation, deal with the unbelief in his men, deal with the enemy, and set these people free. God is calling, I believe, for Davids in the church in these days. Men, women, young people who are filled with faith and expectancy, who will call upon him to arise yet again. People who will stand against the tide of unbelief in the people of God. People whose faith is renewed in him and his mighty power to step in and to intervene in these days. Notice how David handled this situation here. It says, then David inquired, beginning of verse 4, then David inquired of the Lord yet again. David took this situation immediately to the Lord. He didn't get angry with his men here and call them cowards. He could have done that, but he didn't. He knew that that would do no good. He didn't try to argue with them or reason with them. He didn't put any confidence in his own wisdom to try and handle this situation. He felt his utter dependence upon the Lord to take control of the situation. And also, David felt here the need to set before his men a godly example of what they ought to be doing in this situation. That is, he turned once again to the Lord in earnest prayer. He sought to lead his men by example. You know, the most effective way to deal with the unbelief in the church and the people of God is to show them by example what they ought to be doing and how they ought to be reacting. You know, there are some preachers who love to tear stripes of the people of God and to run them down. Now, there is a place, I believe, in preaching for rebuke and for chastising the people of God, done in a right attitude, with a true spirit of humility, always esteeming others better than ourselves. There is a place for that. But I believe that the biblical effective way of dealing with the unbelief in the people of God is to lead them to the promises of God, to set before them an example of absolute faith and confidence in God and dependency upon him. The preacher's business is to lead the people of God, not to drive them. And there's a responsibility upon those who stand behind a pulpit, a great responsibility. You see, God has entrusted the souls and the spiritual well-being of the people of God into the hands of the preacher or the minister. And that's a solemn responsibility, because the preacher's responsibility is by example, not only by preaching and by word, but by example. His responsibility is to lead the people of God, to set before them an example of what they ought to be doing. And that's what David felt he needed to do in this situation. Here were his men. They were afraid to go against the enemy. David, instead of chastising them and rebuking them, he sets before them this wonderful example of confidence and faith in God, taking the whole matter and bringing it to the Lord, pleading his promises. And that is the responsibility of the preacher and the minister as he seeks to help the people of God through his ministry. Thirdly, I want us to consider here David's victory. His victory in the latter part of verse 4. And the Lord answered him and said, "Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will deliver the Philistines into thine hand." So David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their cattle and smote them with a great slaughter. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. Your God's promise is ageless and timeless. Them that honor me, I will honor. The fulfillment of that promise is sure. If we honor the Lord, he will honor us. Whenever we act independently of God, taking matters into our own hands and trying to work things out in the flesh, we will always be the losers. But whenever we seek his face, whenever we take the whole matter and spread it out before him, whenever we look to him for wisdom and guidance and help and direction, then we will never lose. David was seeking God here for the second time. But God wasn't displeased with that. You know what a merciful, compassionate, and patient God we serve today. He knows our weaknesses. He knows the situations that we face. He knows the spiritual battle that we find ourselves in his work and in his cause in these days. And whenever we come to him for the second time or the third time or the fourth time, he doesn't get weary with our much coming. He understands. He knows our hearts and knows how we feel. And we can come to him with that confidence that he will hear us every time we come to him. And God not only responded to David's request here, but he also gave him a more precise answer. He gave him the assurance of an entire victory. What an encouragement to us today to truly honor the Lord, to cast our care upon him, to express continually our absolute dependence upon him. Look at verse 5. It says, "So David and his men went to Keilah, fought with the Philistines and brought away their cattle and smote them with a great slaughter. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah." David knew in his heart that God had sent him here and that he had promised him the victory. And with that assurance in his heart, he went against the Philistines, against the enemy, and they had a wonderful victory. They were completely overthrown before them. Hebrews 11, talking about the great heroes of faith, it said, "Who through faith obtained promises, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens." Perfect description of what David saw accomplished here. May God give us such faith in these days as we face the great enemy of our souls, the great onslaught that is being made by the enemy against the church and against the truth of God in these days. May God give us such faith that we might see the armies of the aliens turn to flight, that we might see the enemy dealt with in these days. Notice that God not only helped David here and his men to completely overcome the enemy, but he also helped them to capture their cattle as well, which would have been a great supply of food for David's men. They were greatly in need of food at this particular point. And this is a beautiful example of God able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we could ever ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. You know, whenever David brought this situation before the Lord and asked him for his help and his guidance, David was probably originally just thinking of seeing the enemy defeated and these people delivered. But God did exceedingly abundantly above all that David could ask or think. God enabled them to capture all of their cattle, which were a wonderful source of food for David's men at this time. God abundantly providing for his army. What a mighty God we serve. What a mighty God we serve. How filled with unbelief we are, aren't we? We limit God by our unbelief, don't we? God is able in these days, no matter what the enemy is doing, no matter how fierce the conflict may be, God is able to do exceeding abundantly. He's able to do them much more than we could ever expect. He did it for David here, and he can do it for us. Fourthly, I want us to look at David's reward here. Look at verse 7. It says, "And it was told Saul that David was come to Keilah, and Saul said, God hath delivered him into mine hand, for he is shut in by entering into a town that hath gates and bars. And Saul called all the people together to war to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. And David knew that Saul secretly practiced mischief against him." Here we find Saul, he's not giving up. He continues to go after David, hounding him, seeking to take his life. But God, we find in this situation, overrules, and by some means, we are not told how, but in verse 9, somehow David finds out, knows exactly what Saul is doing, that he's coming after him. Psalm 25 and verse 14 says, "The secret of the Lord is with them that fear him." The secret of the Lord is with them that fear him. Whenever we walk with God, whenever we truly fear him, we will not be left in the darkness in regard to our enemies' attacks against us. "I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness." What a blessed thing, folks, as we travel the pathway of life and walk the Christian life with the enemy, the devil as a roaring lion, ever crouching there by the side of the path, ever seeking to trip us up, ever seeking to put his pitfalls before us. How wonderful to know that in spite of that, if we walk with God, as we honor him, as we obey him, that he will give us light upon our pathway. He will enable us not to be ignorant of Satan's devices against us, but he will enable us to see and to know where Satan is attacking us. And as we walk with God, who is the light, we will see the dangers that lie before us. And like David here, we can see ourselves delivered from the hand of the enemy. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11, "Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices." Thank God that we are not left in the darkness as the people of God. We're not left at the mercy of the enemy. But as we walk with God, his promise is that he will enable us to know the enemy's strategies against us. We will not be ignorant of his devices. As David walked with God here, he was not ignorant of his enemy's devices against him. Verse 9 starts off with the word "and." And this connects it to what has gone before. There are four things that we see in the life of David here. Firstly, in verse 2, David had inquired of the Lord. He had sought the Lord in regard to the whole matter. Secondly, in verse 3, he had refused to be deflected from the path of duty by the unbelieving fears of his men. Thirdly, in verse 4, he had maintained an attitude of absolute and unswerving dependence upon the Lord. And fourthly, in verse 5, he had very definitely obeyed the Lord, and he had done what the Lord had commanded him. He'd went against the enemy. You see, in all of this, David was walking in the fear of God. And as a reward for that, God caused him to know his enemy's strategies against him. David knew that Saul was coming after him. You know, if we are willing to walk with God, walking in his fear, obeying him, refusing to be turned aside by the unbelieving fears of others around us, maintaining an absolute dependence upon the Lord, obeying him, we will be rewarded by knowing the enemy's strategies against us in these days. And I believe the reason why the enemy is overcoming us as the people of God in these days is because many of God's people are not walking with God. They are not obeying God. They're not walking in the light that God has given to them. And as a result, they are ignorant of Satan's devices. They are not aware of the attacks of the enemy and the strategies of the enemy against us in these days. God is calling us to be a people who will walk with him, who will walk in his fear, who will know the enemy's strategies against us, who will stand for him. The cause of Christ has been attacked in these days as never before. The hymnwriter penned those words, "The world in its proud exaltation, lust of the flesh and the eye, bent on the soul's desecration, God and his people defy." Folks, that is what we're facing in these days. May our prayer be, raise up a people, holy and free, hearts with a vision like unto thee, souls that would rather die than give in, lives with a passion, victory to win. May God grant that to be our experience as a church, as the people of God in these days, in our personal conflict with the enemy, in the conflict with the enemy as a church as a whole. May we know what it is to be those people who walk with God, who know the enemy's devices, and who, like David here, will successfully overcome them as we put our faith and our confidence in God alone. May God encourage us, and may God help us, and may God help us to take these practical examples that we have here in the life of David and apply them in our lives. May we be such people in these days. Let's close.